Hi diddly ho neighborinos, and welcome into the week 10 edition. Yes, we are into double digits, but the week 10 edition of Sunday Best. I'm your host, Jay Felicio, and what you can expect from the show is a quick hitting podcast that's reacting to the happenings of this Sunday's games, week 10. I'm not going to hit every game. I'm not going to hit every player, but what I will do is hit the most impactful storylines, circling around the league, talking about some of the best, some of the worst, and I'll wrap things up by touching on the injuries that happened. Now, this is recorded late on Sunday, so don't have a whole lot of information when it comes to the injuries, but I want to make sure that you're aware of any of the big ones. All this in a neatly wrapped up package in 20 minutes or less, or your money back. It was another Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Jones game from Danny. Daniel Jones played well most of the game, throwing for 255 yards on 26 attempts, but in typical Daniel Jones fashion, he made some dumb mistakes while under pressure. The massive day from Jonathan Taylor prevented Jones from scoring more than once, and it was his second straight game with multiple turnovers. He had three fumbles and lost one of them, also throwing a pick to end the first half. That makes seven turnovers in the Colts' last two games for Daniel Jones. And coming out of the bye, he'll get a double dose of tough matchups as Indy heads to Kansas City in Week 12 before facing Houston at home in Week 13. I still consider him a borderline QB1, but the turnover trend is definitely becoming a concern. Over the Colts' last three games prior to Week 10, Alec Pierce had seen a 9% increase in target volume at the expense of Tyler Warren and Josh Downs, but this week's victim was Michael Pittman. Pittman sadly saw a season-low 2 targets, while Warren had a wonderful stat line of 8 catches on 10 targets and just 1 yard shy of breaking the 100-yard threshold for the first time in his career. It was season highs in targets, catches, and receiving yards for Warren. I noted the target trends over the last 3 weeks in my Week 10 start-sit piece, and I mentioned that if Pierce continues to live towards the top of Indy's target share, that floor paired with his week-winning upside makes Pierce a very dangerous wide receiver 3. Against the Falcons, Pierce caught 4 of 7 targets for 84 yards, 1 touchdown. He had 12 yards per target, 21 yards per reception, and his longest catch of the day was a 37-yard touchdown that he was able to come down with in the first quarter. The down game from Pittman doesn't really concern me long-term, and all of the Colts' pass catchers are startable pretty much every week. See, Pittman is a borderline wide receiver 1, Warren is a borderline but must start tight end 1, Pierce as an explosive wide receiver 3, and Josh Downs is a solid flex who likely needs a touchdown to get into double-digit fantasy points. I won't waste too much time waxing poetically about yet another monster game from Jonathan Taylor, but this guy came into the week with 4 games over 30 points, yet still managed to top them all. He nearly dropped a 50-burger, 32 carries, 244 rushing yards, 3 targets, 3 catches, 42 receiving yards, and yet again, 3 touchdowns for the third time in 4 games. He's literally scored 3 total touchdowns in 50% of his games. If Jonathan Taylor doesn't win MVP this year, we riot. If you have Bijan Robinson on your fantasy team, you may want to skip this part. Bijan was a typical productive self in Week 10, but failed to get in the end zone for the third straight game. Robinson maintained his elite usage with nearly 20 touches, totaling 88 yards, but the ultimate thorn in our side, Tyler Algier, handled all 3 carries inside the 10 and scored twice. The Falcons' backup is up to a career-high 6 touchdowns, and while Bijan remains a top 3 fantasy running back, the frustrating usage of Algier in the red zone is capping what should be an unlimited upside. Algier isn't consistent enough to start even at flex, but he should be rostered in all leagues as an elite handcuff. The beast of a rookie receiver in Tampa Bay scored twice, his 3rd and 4th touchdowns in the last 4 games, and no, I'm not talking about Emeka Egbuka. It was Tez Johnson with his first 20-point fantasy performance. Johnson is averaging nearly 6 targets per game since Week 6 and has over 11 fantasy points in 3 of those 4 games. The fact that Johnson continues to deliver while Emeka Egbuka continues to get fed gives me confidence that this production is sustainable. If he's somehow still available in your league, drop the bag, make it rain, throw all your gold like Scrooge McDuck, do whatever you have to do to get Tez Johnson. He's a high upside wide receiver 3 with a decent floor and some week-winning spike weeks sprinkled in. If you've listened to the show at least once, you've probably heard me shout from the mountaintops my affinity for Travion Henderson, how Mike Vrabel's refusal to use him is the most bewildering decision since I thought it was a good idea to eat leftover pizza at 11 p.m. Henderson had not 1, but 2 rushing touchdowns over 50 yards and hit a top speed of 22 miles per hour on the 55-yard run, the fastest by a rookie ball carrier this season, her next-gen stats. It was the longest rushing touchdown by a Patriots rookie since 1969, and I wish I could say with confidence that this breakout performance was enough for Henderson to lock in as the Patriots' leading back. But undrafted free agent rookie Terrell Jennings handled the team's first four rushing attempts before getting hurt. And remember, it took injuries to Antonio Gibson, Ramondre Stevenson, and apparently Jennings for Henderson to get this type of volume. If Vrabel is able to get past his own ego and feed Henderson a mouthwatering rest of the season schedule featuring the Jets, the Bengals, the Giants, a bye, then the Bills, Ravens, and Jets in the fantasy playoffs could catapult the rookie into league winner status. Just when you think things have hit rock bottom for the New York Football Giants, the filthy, flimsy floor crumbles underneath and they tumble down even further. Jackson Dart was having his best game of his short career before suffering a concussion that knocked him out of the game. The rookie was 19 for 29, 242 passing yards, 66 rushing yards, with two rushing touchdowns, and a 10-point lead over Chicago in Chicago. Dart actually set an NFL record, becoming the first quarterback in NFL history to rush for a touchdown in five straight games. I'm as shocked as you are. Not Michael Vick, not Lamar Jackson, not Josh Allen. Jackson Dart. He'll probably miss week 11 because of his concussion, but unless he has lingering symptoms, he should only miss one game. Jackson Dart is locked in as an every week must start in all formats when he's able to return. Yes, Travis Etienne had a second string game with over 15 fantasy points, but he didn't look particularly good. Etienne totaled just 58 rushing yards on 16 carries with an abysmal 3.6 yards per carry. He saw his usual allotment of pass game work, but came down with just two catches for 19 yards. Etienne did break a few tackles from Texans defenders for a 6-yard score in the third and capped it off with throwing some shade at the Texans fans, hitting the trademark bow celebration from former Houston stud running back Arian Foster. Etienne's volume keeps him as a weekly starter and a solid RB2, but don't confuse back-to-back decent fantasy totals as a sign that he's running the ball any better. Parker Washington led the Jags with 7 targets, was only able to turn him into 3 catches for 33 yards. And that being said, one of those catches was an incredible toe-tap touchdown in the corner of the end zone with two Texans defenders draped all over him. Washington would follow up the first quarter touchdown with a 75-yard punt return score in the second quarter, but would wind up making a costly mistake towards the end of the first half that potentially cost the Jaguars points. He came a yard short of a first down on the second 18 when he failed to reach out for the first down marker, and the flub forced the Jags to run a quarterback sneak on the next play, wasting a ton of time, and in the hurry-up, Lawrence would wind up throwing an interception on the very next play. As for the newly acquired Jacoby Myers, all in all, it was a respectable debut. He led the team in receiving yards and showed off his incredible hands with a 10-yard catch that he made, practically with his eyes closed, falling down with the Houston cornerback draped all over him. The receiver room is eventually going to get awfully crowded when Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Hunter return, but it was a welcome sight to see Myers assimilate into the Jags offense so seamlessly. Myers should have had the game's first touchdown, but the score was called back on a false start. I'd consider both Washington and Myers flex options, but with a non-existent floor when the receiver room in Jacksonville is healthy. Talks of Nico Collins' demise have been greatly exaggerated. Despite having Davis Mills under center, Collins made plays all day, turning a season-high 15 targets into 7 catches, 136 receiving yards, a redonkulous one-handed grab with some toe-drag swag to come down with a 2-point conversion. It was just Collins' second game this season with over 100 receiving yards, but it was arguably the best he's looked all year. It was his third straight game with double-digit targets. He could have had an even better game, but Davis Mills missed him multiple times in the end zone. With a season-high in targets, receiving yards, and a couple of should-have-been touchdowns, Nico Collins proved that he is still quarterback-proof. Woody Marks would see over 11 carries for only the second time this season and score his second rushing touchdown on a short dive in the second quarter, the best part being Woody Marks took all the goal line carries and accounted for 14 of the Texans' 19 rushing attempts. Nick Chubb handled just 5 attempts for the second time this season and averaged over 9 yards per carry. Now, I know we've been down this road before, but it looks like Marks may have taken over the Texans' backfield. Marks once again proved that he's able to carry the load if the Texans would just trust him with it. If they do, Marks is locked in as RB2 for the rest of the season. If not, you're looking at flex value. What a relief it was to see Justin Jefferson bounce back for his best game of the season. 5 catches on 6 targets for 120 feet. Oh, wait. Hold on. What? Oh, I'm sorry. That was actually Jalen Naylor who had that line for the best game of his career. Jefferson was targeted 12 times, but J.J. McCarthy continues to be out of sync with them, and Jay Jettah only caught 4 passes for 37 yards. It was just his first game under 10 points this season, so I'd still consider him a must-start because of that hibernating upside, but I'm holding out hope that he goes ballistic to finish the season, facing Washington, Dallas, the Giants, and the Lions. Now, I've seen a lot of questions if you should trade Justin Jefferson, and honestly, it's a case-by-case basis. I'm willing to go down with the ship because I don't think my heart could take watching Jefferson go off and leading somebody else's team to a fantasy championship. Now, I know that the chances of that happening are slim, so trading him could be the move to make, but I just can't do it. And one of the most disappointing performances of Week 10 was Quinshon Judkins for the Browns. He did handle the majority of the snaps for the Browns and took 22 carries for 75 yards, chipped in 2 receptions on 3 targets for 10 yards, but was only able to muster 10.5 fantasy points in what should have been a fantastic matchup against the Jets, who just got rid of their 2 best defenders. He is a phenomenal runner of the football, but his lack of involvement in the passing game does cap his upside in these games where there is a bad game script. The Jets scored 2 special teams touchdowns, which prevented them from handing him the ball over and over again. He's yet to score more than 14 fantasy points in any game that he doesn't score a touchdown. And those unforgiving fantasy injuries continue to roll in. And as I said earlier, Jackson Dart suffered a concussion and didn't return. Unsure when he might be able to suit up again, but I wouldn't expect it to be more than a game or two. Davante Adams suffered an oblique injury, but according to Coach Sean McVay, who was held out as a precaution, he should be fine for Week 11. Garrett Wilson re-aggravated his knee injury and will undergo further evaluation on Monday. Since this is a re-aggravation, I would not be surprised to see him miss multiple games, but keep an eye out on the reports from this further evaluation. But keep an eye on practice reports. Dalton Kincaid left the game versus Miami with a hamstring injury and didn't return. Kincaid's already missed a few games, and soft tissue injuries are always a concern. Keep an eye on practice reports, but I wouldn't be surprised to see if he missed a few games. Bam Knight for the Cardinals suffered an ankle injury against the Seahawks. It's a moot point if Trey Benson can return in Week 11, but if he doesn't, this could hold fantasy relevance given that Michael Carter and DeMarcado would be in line for more work. Rashad Bateman suffered an ankle injury, but isn't expected to miss extended time. And that is a wrap for the first double-digit episode of Sunday Best. I appreciate you all hanging out with me. I'll be back on Sunday with the Week 11 edition. Same bat time, same bat channel. And as always, choose love, not hate.